Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton is a graduate of Harvard Law School, a military veteran who served nearly 5 years in Iraq and Afghanistan, and a past member of the Old Guard at Arlington National Cemetery. His military decorations include the Bronze Star, Combat Infantry Badge, and Ranger Tab. He is also the author of Sacred Duty, A Soldier's Tour at Arlington National Cemetery, which is now a New York Times bestseller. Senator Cotton, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on, and thanks for your interest in Sacred Duty.
Well, first off, I just want to say that given that we're coming up on the 50th anniversary of Woodstock in August, I find it refreshing to interview someone whose personal philosophy is the antithesis of relativism. And even though I've always had strong libertarian leanings myself, your book was a reminder to me once again that while a lot of things may sound great in theory, the reality is that civilization cannot exist without a generally accepted code of conduct. And the code of conduct you write about in your book, as embraced by the Old Guard, is a graphic reminder of this. So why don't you start by explaining to our listeners just who the Old Guard is and what functions they perform.
The Old Guard is the Army's oldest regiment. They were first stood up in 1784, and for 160 years they fought in all the nation's major conflicts, to include the Mexican-American War, where they were a decisive force, and the Civil War, where they fought in every major battle on the Eastern Front, from the First Battle of Bull Run to the Battle of Gettysburg. But for the last 71 years, they've served at Arlington National Cemetery as the Army's official ceremonial unit, where they perform military honor funerals for our fallen heroes and veterans, guard the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, and perform ceremonies around the Capital Region. And I was a platoon leader with the Old Guard between my tours in Iraq and Afghanistan.
And, you know, having lived in Washington for so many years myself, I was fortunate to have had the opportunity to visit Arlington National Cemetery many times. And I have to say that each and every time, it was an incredibly moving experience. No American should miss it. And perhaps the most emotional experience of all was the Tomb of the Unknown Soldiers. And I'd like you to tell us a little bit about how the Old Guard watches over the tomb and why it's so important to them.
The Tomb of the Unknown Soldier started on what was then known as Armistice Day, now Veterans Day, 1921, where we laid to rest an unknown soldier for World War I. It now also includes crypts with unknown soldiers for World War II and the Korean War. And for the last 82 years, since July 2nd, 1937, the Army has guarded that tomb around the clock, 24 hours a day, with not a single moment's break. And the Old Guard obviously has performed that for 71 of those 82 years. And we do that initially, it was a way to honor the thousands of soldiers whose remains could not be identified from those wars in an era before modern forensic science. But as the tomb guards told me, in many ways, the tomb has become kind of the iconic place where we mourn all of our nation's war dead, from Lexington and Concord to Afghanistan today. And one reason why those tomb guards work so hard, work around the clock, put in the longest of hours to perfect their craft, is to pay honor to not just those three unknowns, but every single soldier who has ever laid down his life in defense of our nation and freedom.
In your book, you say that the most common question you get from constituents is about the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. And I was just curious, what do people specifically want to know about the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier?
Well, because the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier is such an iconic location, that means the tomb guards are themselves the most famous and iconic part of the Old Guard. Many Arkansans, many Americans who know I served at the Old Guard, mistakenly believe that the tomb guards, in fact, are the Old Guard, when in reality, it's one of the smallest and most specialized units inside the regiment. There's only about 25 or 30 guards at any given time, and about 1,500, but the regiment itself has about 1,500. So they often mistake my service at the Old Guard for service at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. I will sometimes joke that I was an officer, and officers can't be trusted with such a sensitive duty, which is mostly a joke because they do. And the tomb platoon has, in fact, had officers over the years. I think 7 or 8 officers have earned the tomb badge, one of the rarest badges in the entire military. But although I never served at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, I did participate in some of the various ceremonies they have there to conduct wreath layings with the Army or with all the joint forces.
I'll tell you, it sends chills up my spine whenever I'm there, for sure. Why don't you tell us about Section 60 of Arlington National Cemetery and why it's often referred to as the saddest acre in America?
Well, Section 60 is known as the saddest acre in America in many quarters because it's where we have laid to rest those fallen heroes who died in the war on terrorism over the last 18 years, starting in 2002. Of course, most people who have been killed under arms in the last 18 years have been buried closer to home in their families' burial plots. But by far the largest single location for our war dead from these last 18 years are in Section 60. So it's just a very different kind of section of the cemetery. Many sections are older and full. So the people who visit them are the descendants of, say, World War I veterans, or maybe olderns who are going to see a battle buddy who died 50 years ago or more in Vietnam, whereas Section 60 really is a living testament to those who have died in the war on terrorism. It's much more commonly visited by families and friends and battle buddies, by school youth groups making trips to learn about the cemetery. On Memorial Day weekend in particular, there are thousands of visitors over the course of the weekend, many family members coming back to check on lost husbands and wives, sons and daughters, moms and dads, to share stories with them and keep them apprised of what's happening in their lives. So it really is a living testament to the courage and the sacrifice of those who laid down their life in our most recent wars. And although I realize the reasons why some people refer to it as the saddest acre in America, for those reasons, I prefer to think of it as the noblest acre in America.
Well, that leads right into my next question. In your book, you describe the precision standards required of men and women in the old guard, and a lot of people might not understand why precision is so important when it comes to honoring dead soldiers. So why don't you explain the relationship between the concept of honor and the incredible precision demonstrated by the old guard?
Well, discipline are traits that are necessary in any military operation. And the precision and the pursuit of perfection that one sees in Arlington from the old guard is exactly what we would see from our soldiers all around the world. But Arlington is a special place. There are no do-overs inside Arlington National Cemetery. And while the old guard might perform 20 or 30 funerals in a day, we knew that for each one of those families, it was a once-in-a-lifetime moment. And that was a lifetime in the making. And we wanted to do everything we could to present a final perfect moment of honor for the family and the loved ones and the mourners to remember as they laid their loved one to rest.
One of the things that really got my attention was when you wrote about a supernumerary. Explain to our listeners exactly what a supernumerary is to the old guard.
Yeah, well, the supernumerary is a fancy Latin word for one above the number, as we called them behind the scenes at the old guard, the super. You know, it can be very hard to stand at attention for a long ceremony, a long funeral. So part of any group of soldiers in formation is always super. The super is ready to fill in should someone have a fallout for medical or health reasons. And it doesn't happen often. It's something that the old guard trains extensively to avoid. But sometimes, you know, in 100-degree weather and the humidity in the middle of July and August, it's inevitable. And the super will march out in a military fashion to the formation, and he will pick up the fallout's rifle and step into formation. And a non-commissioned officer, a sergeant who's in the wings as well, will walk off and carry the fallout away. So the funeral will end exactly as it began, with the super standing in for the soldier who fell out.
Speaking of fallen heroes, because I lived in Haymarket, Virginia, which is in the Gainesville area, if you're not familiar with it. And I lived there for more than a decade, so I had occasion to drive by Bull Run many times a week. And I remember thinking about how surreal it was to know that thousands of Americans got killed or wounded just 150 years earlier, right there on that site I was looking at. And it kind of gave me a sense of history that I just don't think you get in history books. And I was just curious to know, because I know you're so into this, do you ever get that kind of feeling when you visit some of the historic sites in Washington, like Mount Vernon and so forth?
Certainly so, and Arlington is one of the most historic sites. You know, Arlington is also known, it was known for much of the early 19th century, as Washington's treasury, because the early owner of Washington was Martha Washington's natural grandson from her deceased first husband, and George Washington's adopted grandson. He was raised at Mount Vernon and in Philadelphia during President Washington's 8 years as president, and he built that mansion up on a hill in Arlington as kind of an homage to Mount Vernon and his mother and father's home. And he spent much of his life often going into debt in Arlington's finances to collect memorabilia, heirlooms, relics from George Washington, which he kind of threw open to the public in a kind of public museum and memorial to the father of our country. His daughter, Mary Custis, married Robert E. Lee, and they were together there during the wintertime for 30 years almost, from 1831 to 1861, until Robert E. Lee declined command of the Union Army in April 1861. And about a month later, the Union Army crossed the river in the dead of night and occupied that strategic high ground above the nation's capital. And for 158 years, they've held that ground every day.
Okay, I'm going to ask you one last question about the book and then a non-book question to close out. So the last and maybe most important question on the book is, what's the most important message you would like readers to take away from your book?
When the old guard officer in charge presents a flag to the next of kin, whether it's, you know, an adult child from an elderly veteran who's passed away in the fullness of life, or a grieving young widow, he says that he presents that flag on behalf of the president and the United States Army, but also on behalf of a grateful nation. And I want all of the readers and all of your listeners to know that the Old Guard performs this mission not only for themselves and for the Army, but they really do perform it on behalf of all of us as a nation. And I think that tells a lot about who we are and what we hold dear as a nation, that we go to such extreme lengths to bring back our war dead under all circumstances and to honor them in the most precise and exact ways. I know that we can sometimes seem divided and that we live in politically divided times, but the Old Guard in Arlington National Cemetery is a reminder to us all, whatever our political party or viewpoints, about what we hold most dear in this nation.
All right, I want to close out on a one question that's not about your book, but I'm very interested to hear what your input is here. You've been quoted as saying that war is never inevitable. War is always the product of human choices, which brings me to Iran. You've said that if Iran started an all-out war against the United States or its allies, all it would take to defeat them is a first strike and a last strike. And I want to know if you meant that literally or figuratively.
No, so what I meant by that is that we would not provoke or start a war with Iran. If we were to have any kind of war or military action against Iran, it would be because Iran would launch the first strike. If they did launch a first strike, however, they should be assured that we would launch the last strike, and that is all it would take. Now, I hope to be able to deter Iran from launching that first strike, and it does look, after the last month, with the deployments of some additional ships and aircraft and missile defense systems to the Middle East, that the Ayatollahs have gotten the message. But they should make no mistake. If they were to launch a first strike against United States citizens or personnel or facilities in the Persian Gulf region, they would face a devastating response.
That's pretty clear. I think you're right. I tend to agree with you. Well, Senator Cotton, I really appreciate your sharing your thoughts with us today. And I want to wish you continued success with your sobering new book, Sacred Honor, A Soldier's Tour at Arlington National Cemetery. And please keep up the good work, and I hope we can hook up again down the road.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.